The Big Story is brought to you by Scotiabank. For my entire life, as long as I've known enough about geography to know the United States was our neighbor, I've felt really good about that fact. Like a lot of Canadians, sure, I've been conflicted about the actions of its government, especially lately, or its generally very nice people's disturbing love of firearms. But America itself? Really, best neighbor you could ask for. Rich, powerful, and pretty much in alignment with us. But these days, it's like somebody new moved in next door, and that never hit home harder than last week.
Two people have been killed. A man shot inside that Kroger and a woman out in the parking lot shot dead. The suspect.
The functional explosive showing up in packages addressed to several political leaders today. Each device was made the same way.
He entered the synagogue heavily armed, and during the attack, officials say he used all of his weapons.
It's one thing to disagree with the policies of the Trump administration. I promise this episode is not about Trump. This is about a deeply divided country facing a deeply uncertain future. And it's very tempting, sure, to say from up here that after Trump, America will be fine again. But what if these problems predate the guy in the White House by decades? What if we look at things on a bigger timeline with a wider lens? What if the hyperbole that gets thrown around about the end of America isn't hyperbole at all? What if it's coming from experts in fields like insurgency, in civil conflict, and in climate? What if the right spark hits the powder keg that sits just below us at the worst possible time? What happens to Canada then? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
Countries where, for example, the Supreme Court is not treated as a legitimate institution, you know, those countries have weak political institutions, and weak political institutions lead to chaos.
Stephen Marsh is a writer with The Walrus and many other publications. His most recent piece at thewalrus.ca is called America's Next Civil War, and that's not hyperbole either. Stephen, explain to me what America's Next Civil War looks like.
Well, I don't think it'll be like a like the old Civil War, people in different uniforms with different governments fighting each other over, the resources of the country, or constitutional legal debates. Like, I think what it will look like would be something like Syria, where a series of collapses, both environmental and institutional and political, just lead to sort of chaos and a bunch of fragments competing among each other for dominance. The thing I was trying to get at in this piece was really that there are these trends that are way bigger and way deeper than the sort of news of the day. You know, like you can get, especially in the Trump era, you can just get so caught up in the latest outrage that you fail to see the bigger picture. And the bigger picture here is that America is just getting incredibly divided and its institutions are weakening. And these are the kind of, premonitions. These are the kind of things that happen before countries fall apart.
When we see a week like we saw last week with just, a handful of incidents that seem totally driven by hatred from one side of the spectrum to the other.
Yeah. Like,
is it insane to ask if America's already in a civil war? Because it felt like an insane question to write down as I was writing it, but I've realized that I probably should ask.
Well, the definition of a civil war is 1,000 combatant deaths a year, but the definition of a civil conflict is 25 deaths a year. And, there were 12 yesterday. Right.
Right.
And certainly if any of those bombs had gone off, we'd certainly be well over 25. If you include the sovereign citizens, if you include murders of policemen by anti-government patriot, acts, then they're definitely over 25. I think when you compare that to the unrest in the 60s and the 70s, like the Black Panthers and the Weathermen, they weren't even close. Right. Like they were never anywhere near as dangerous as the anti-government patriot movement. So, I don't think it's crazy to think of, civil war may not be the right phrase yet, but civil conflict for sure.
When we talk about, and you use a phrase like anti-government patriot groups, what kind of groups are we talking about and like how prevalent are they?
It's very hard to actually describe what they are because they're so varied and they're so chaotic. And they're also so ideologically inconsistent. The experts that I talked to at the Southern Poverty Law Center and the ADL, like you know, what they describe it as, like, it's trying to determine what the rock was from the shattered glass on your windshield. It's very, very complicated. But to take, for example, the sovereign citizen movement, which is, you know, doesn't believe that the 14th Amendment was real and therefore they don't have to pay taxes, and they believe that, you know, essentially they're sovereign citizens of themselves and have no fealty to the U.S. government. Something Poverty Law Center puts a basement figure on that of 300,000 people. So
that's an insane amount of people that just don't believe that the law applies to them.
Yeah. And, you know, the law, like law enforcement agencies in the United States, is by far their number one fear, because these people shoot cops, right? You know, the line between that and, you know, simple traditional anti-government conservatism is, of course, vast, right? I mean, the difference between a Reaganite low tax person and someone murdering the police is very different. These are entirely separate forms of humanity. But on the other hand, like, there is a certain creep away from that. There are people in the West who believe that they're allowed to, you know, they're allowed to provide armed resistance against the federal government over federal government land. There's huge numbers of militias all over the country, Oath Keepers, that are quite public and quite middle class even, and they are preparing for the collapse of the U.S. government, but also they kind of want it to collapse. They don't really want a government in the United States.
When you spoke to some of these people who actually look at what causes societies to collapse, do they give you any sense of how close they are? Because this is the line that I have trouble walking. It seems like, on the one hand, it seems like this is a really necessary conversation to have, especially right now. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, it always feels, even though maybe it shouldn't, like I'm leaning towards hyperbole, you know, when we say things like the fall of Rome.
Well, look, I mean, if a year ago you had said to somebody, you know, they're going to be arresting children and separating from their families on the border, and then they're going to be children camps at the border filled with little brown children who've done nothing more, and they're not going to be able to get back to their parents, and this is going to be an avowed technique of the president, everyone would have said, you're crazy, you're exaggerating. If you'd said, you know, they'll be sending, like, bombs will be going out, and the president will describe the press as the enemy of the people, they will all would at the same, in the same day, they all would have said, you're crazy. We're so shocked all the time by everything that happens. And the reason we're shocked is because we're not paying attention to the underlying structures here, which, you know, predate Trump by quite a way and will continue for him after. I asked all these people the tipping point too. No one knows, right? Like, and no one will say it because they're all too smart, because, like, it's like, well, there's no saying the exact date that, you know, that things are going to happen. But, you know, countries where, for example, the Supreme Court is not treated as a legitimate institution, you know, those countries have weak political institutions, and weak political institutions lead to chaos.
We don't generally consider those countries democracies.
Actually, I think we do consider them democracies. This is very recognizable to people who study new democracies in the third world. You know, I was in Belize over the winter, and there was an election there. And the election there is essentially a competition for resources between two groups, and whoever wins gets the spoils of the whole country. And increasingly, that's what the American democracy looks like. That's not anti-democracy. That's actually what a lot of democracies look like. The question is, in all these places, is there a peaceful transition of power, right?
Right.
And in America, there certainly is still the peaceful transition of power. Like, we have not, let us not hyperbolize that. Although, when I was in Washington for the inauguration, it really didn't look like it would have taken much for it to get quite violent.
Last week saw pipe bombs going to prominent Democrats.
Yes.
What happens if the Democrats sweep the midterms?
Well, I mean, I think one thing I know almost for certain is that the right-wing groups will feel that they are under a threat and under attack, and that they will therefore need to be more resistant to the federal government, right? I mean, this is what happened after Obama took power. This is feeding on itself, right? Like, and the logic of it builds on its own momentum. And so, like, what we're seeing is, like, these two essentially political tribes separating. And they increasingly don't have any place where they can negotiate settlements. I talked to a lot of experts, and I always asked them, like, how does this resolve itself? And they basically said it doesn't. I mean, like, there is no optimistic scenario here.
Up next,
there comes a point where you have to ask yourself, okay, well, what do we stand for and what are we going to do about it? And I think, we are going to be involved in a process of separating ourselves from the United States. I don't think we're going to have a choice.
You can save like never before with the Scotiabank Momentum Plus Savings Account. And now, for a limited time, you can earn up to 3.2% interest until March 10th. You can find all the terms and conditions at scotiabank.com/MP. What do we get wrong in Canada about predicting America or analyzing America?
I don't think we get much wrong. I think we're very, very good at it. It is the job. Like everyone in power, that's your job, is to figure out what America is going to do, because, you know, we're still basically militarily a subaltern of the United States.
Which is why this piece is so terrifying, by the way.
Well, I mean, look at it this way. Like, I think one thing is that in the end of the first Civil War, Confederation happened immediately. And the reason was that we realized, like, we need to protect ourselves and defend ourselves against this madness. And I would actually say that American chaos has done a lot more for Canadian unity than any purpose that we share or certainly any fellow feeling among the various regions. There comes a point where you have to ask yourself, okay, well, what do we stand for and what are we going to do about it? And I think, we are going to be involved in a process of separating ourselves from the United States. I don't think we're going to have a choice.
And America's got these insane political divisions that you kind of mentioned, and mm-hmm. There's already a crapload of guns everywhere.
Yes.
What pushes it towards the point where there's no turning back?
Well, the guys that really scared me to talk to, I mean, to the point where I couldn't actually do it more than a little bit each day, were the experts on agriculture and the environment. A lot of the time we talk about the environment and we talk to environmentalists and we talk to people who study the environment and who give these sort of general prognostications, right? But then you talk to the guy who's like responsible for helping farmers deal with climate change and corn production in the U.S. He's dealing with very specific problems with really massive outcomes. So, like, if the temperature goes up by 4 degrees, then that really affects incredibly intensely the ability of corn to germinate. And if corn doesn't germinate, then, you know, the fact that we can basically eat whatever we want and we have all this cheap food that we don't even really think of as cheap, that all goes away. And those kind of scenarios are really apocalyptic. You know, that is what happened in Syria. Like, in Syria, what happened is that there were a series of droughts.
Yeah.
And that's also what happened in Central America. There were these series of droughts. The last big drought in America was 2012. July 2012, where they had this incredibly hot month. And America produces 40% of commodity crop exports in the world. So it really feeds the world
right.
through its corn and soybean and sorghum production. So when that happened, you know, when that happened in Syria, basically what happened is you had these droughts. You had 1 million people moving into the city. You had, you know, migration on this epic scale because of climate change. And then you also had inflation spikes. So the value of money starts to fall apart. And then from there, everything starts to fall apart, right? I mean, the
right.
money isn't worth anything. You can't get food. You know, food is scarce. Everyone is moving. Change, the change is very much in the air. If there were 2012 drought, say 3 years in a row in the United States, which
doesn't seem that impossible anymore.
You know, it probably happened. It's entirely credible that would happen. You know, that would be really, really, really terrible. I mean, you talk to a guy, like a really sensible guy who's at a little institute in Portland, and you're like, well, what are the chances that New York will fall? And he's like, oh, very high.
Jesus.
Like, it's totally, you know, they're not prepared. Hurricanes are increasing in intensity and frequency. So, I mean, do the math. There already was Sandy. New York is a very complex system. It cannot take a sudden influx of salt water. You know, they haven't recovered from September 11th entirely yet. New York's incredibly vulnerable, and it's going to be in a hurricane path. So do the math.
Yeah, then you have so-called caravans coming up from America to Canada.
Yeah, I mean, I have this, this story is like, I do these little fictional interpretations, and Canadians like to brag about our multiculturalism, but like, we are, you know, America is 61%, we're 61% white, we're 78% white. We actually have a very low threshold for tolerance for illegal immigration. I don't think there would be, you know, this trickle that's coming up, we're sort of congratulating ourselves on dealing with it. It's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. And if it were to start in earnest, I think we would build a fence faster. It wouldn't even be a debate. We would do it.
It feels like for so long, and maybe this is my own naivete, but it feels for so long like it's been reassuring to have this giant mega military power to the south of us. And we can just kind of, you know, sit there.
It came with huge advantages.
Yeah.
We never had to have a military budget. I mean, we never had to have a military budget because, like, we're in between Russia and the States. Like, they need to protect us, right? That's the stuff that's going. And it's, you know, already we've increased our military expenditure. We've almost doubled it, right, since Trump took power.
Yep.
So, you know, I think a lot of separation is going to be taking place. I think it's actually a massive political task. It's hard to fathom how big it is. But, you know, I think ordinary people are starting to wake up and say, like, well, you know, we can't rely on this. This is not going to last forever, this economic halcyon period in the United States. And when it falls, then what it looks like is really, really hard to know.
The last question I have for you is, you said one of the lines from your piece that I've been thinking about is, in a sense, the crisis has already arrived. Only the inciting incident is missing. If that wasn't last week, what is that incident? What does it look like?
Well, what does it look like? A much more serious terrorist attack. People from the military
right.
making an attack, which has happened in other countries where this happens. Chile is actually a pretty interesting case where, you know, the violence on the street just got to the point where between the two parties, that the military stepped in and imposed tranquilidad, as that was the phrase that they used. And I'm not sure I can. The problem with imagining an inciting incident is that I can't imagine it.
Right.
We don't know what it'll look like. But when Buchanan made his statement at the State of the Union that he could not force the South to stay, but it was also they were not part of the Union if they didn't agree to end slavery. That was the end of American unity. It just took 4 months for it to actually collapse. That happened very rapidly. We've been in a 30-year trend of dissociation in America, and it's going to get worse. And how long it's going to take to get to that point is really, I'm not sure.
Stephen Marsh is a writer with The Walrus and many other publications. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotiabank. You can earn up to 3.2% interest until March 10th with the Scotiabank Momentum Plus Savings Account. Conditions apply. For more from us, visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. Check out some of our other episodes, drop us a line, or hit us up on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts for free. Apple, Google, Spotify, wherever you like. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.